woke it up, woke it up, woke it up. Oh, so I should speak up.
Yeah.
Is that better?
That's better.
Good. I'm glad we're back. Is that right? 118?
It is. I'm ready to go, dude. We gotta do a speed run because I gotta shave my head. I gotta pack because I'm going out of town.
Are you?
Yeah. Is it?
I was not aware of that.
No, you were aware of that.
Oh yeah, because I was supposed to take you to the airport or something.
You're gonna take me to the airport.
Talking to me when I'm asleep. All right, speed round then. Mood to scale 114. Bad news ramen right in front of me. I'm better have my donuts. I really don't know where to go because you're in full on boycott mode here. As my
I watched Raw.
Oh, you did watch Raw.
Yeah, I watched this past Raw, but
well.
But I fast forwarded a lot of stuff. So, out of all the matches on Raw, what matches do you think I watched in earnest, if I'm being earnest, in earnest?
I'm guessing you watched Owens-Randy Orton.
I did watch that. What else do you think I watched?
There was two Divas matches. I'm guessing you watched at least one of them.
Watched both of them.
You did watch both.
And one more. Uno Mas, like my Hispanic brethren would say.
I'm guessing you did not watch Rollins-Cena.
I did not.
See, I know you pretty well. Let's see, was there... Oh, you probably watched Lucha Dragons v. Your Puerto Rican Bullfighters.
Yeah. I thought that was a good match. So that's all I really watched. I didn't watch any of the other rigmarole. But I did watch the knee shot to John Cena's broken nose.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how everybody tries to... You know, this whole thing, like... I mean, are we in this time of being a wrestling fan... Where we still have to use the tagline of "Do you think wrestling is fake?" And then they show his broken nose. I mean, wrestling is fake; it's predetermined, but the action can get real, and people can get hurt. It's like, I don't know, dude. I'm already mad at Cena, and now more people are like just kind of stumping for the guy because he broke his nose.
Yeah. So. I got into a couple of Twitter beefs since Monday. I guess one, I don't know, it stemmed off of one or two comments, and one ended up being actually a pretty reasonable conversation. But yeah, it just, you know, people want to do a backflip because he finished a match with a broken nose. Every fucking person in that locker room would have finished a match with a broken nose. And anybody that wouldn't have would probably be looking for work at this point.
Well, so Sami Zayn had a match with him, and he tore his arm pretty much.
Right.
And he still wrestled.
And they tried to cover it. Either they didn't know he had torn his rotator cuff or whatever the shoulder injury was. They tried to cover for it and say, like, oh, he heard it on some, like, John Cena powerbomb or something like that, which was completely false. But, yeah, that's what I'm saying. And it's like, you know, like... I'm willing to give John Cena certain amounts of credit for things that he does.
But he's no Triple H. I mean, Triple H like tore the muscle off his flipping bone.
That is the gold standard. And I was there, and I can't stand Triple H. But that and oddly enough, one of the, like, I think it was some cage match he had with Mick Foley, were like the two matches where, like, I came to, like, respect Triple H. I don't know, I just, like...
His toughness.
And just, yeah, and like, dedication and stuff like that.
I mean, can we finish that Triple H story? I mean, the guy, the muscle is completely off his leg bone. And Jericho...
He tore his quad, and essentially, like the quad muscle rolled up his leg as, like, like a shade. If you had, like, a shade that had spring action, it, like, yeah, rolled up his leg. And Jericho, you know,
Jericho knows he's hurt. I mean, everybody knew he was hurt.
And Jericho was trying to protect him.
Yeah, and Jericho asked him, like,
and that's actually pretty interesting considering those guys really didn't care for each other,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
But a professional respect.
But it's kind of like the same thing. Like, Jericho probably felt the exact same way about Triple H that you do, but he found a newfound respect for him because he asked him.
He axed him?
Yeah, you know, I didn't want to say axed, but he asked him, if he should put the line tamer on him. He's like, yeah, do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, and this guy breaks his nose, and then, you know, and it runs the wires, and it's like, you know, okay, so he broke his nose, but he's been breaking my back for the past 10 plus years, Dean.
Well, there's that, and it's just like, okay, they had to stop the match, you know, essentially like four times where like Seth Rollins is dealing damage, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, it makes it not look right. Okay, because I mean, this is an industry where, you know, you have like a, I don't know, like an extreme rules match, and someone will take like, you know, 10 chair shots, right? But you don't see them backing off like you know, the attacker when a guy takes a chair shot to bring the referees in and check them out and stuff like that. I mean, it's a broken nose. It's like full on, like, okay, I shudder to even try to make this like a comparison, but like when Foley got chokeslammed through the cage, or when he got thrown off the top and he was like literally concussed in the match and they needed to bring doctors in to see, like, you know, is this guy okay? Okay, that's one thing. Okay,
but I don't even think they did that.
I think they did in one of those.
Yeah.
They did. They stalled it. They stalled out because, like, he was really woozy and he continued that match. And in no way at all am I trying to equate John Cena like battling through like with a broken nose. And to further my point, if the standard of greatness is now finishing the match with a broken nose, then Wade Barrett should be the number one man in the frickin' business.
Well, not only that, but there seemed to be a wrestler that broke his flippin' neck and he still finished the match, right? And that was the Stone Cold and Owen Hart one.
That was a really ugly finish, but yes,
it was an ugly finish. Yeah, but and you can even take it even further when probably the most egregious one, but you could respect what was going on, was when Buff Bagwell broke his neck as well.
Yeah, and I think
he won that match too. But he's pretty much just laying there in the middle of the ring going, I can't move, and they finished the match.
And I think even worse with that was, I think JBL was like kind of trying to do it to him. Like, there was something, not that he knew he was going to break his neck, per se. But,
well, this was in WCW, it wasn't in...
I think it was JBL.
In WCW? No, this was a WCW match with Buff Bagwell. Maybe you didn't see that one.
No, I did, but I'm...
But JBL wasn't there. I don't think he fought JBL.
We're going to have to do some fact-checking on that one. I'm not saying I'm...
But anyways...
I'm not saying I'm right 100%, okay. But I...
You're not?
I'm not, but my memory tells me that it was JBL that did it to him. And
you know, I'm more apt to believe you because you're not staring up at my ceiling while you're saying that, and you're just going all balls out on this one, dude.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
But yeah. I still disagree with you. Okay. But yeah, and I appreciate the idea of it, but I think you're wrong.
Yeah. And then the other thing too, just to juxtapose, you know, we're like G1 Climax 25 is currently happening, and there was a match with Hiroshi Tenzan and Toru Yano, and Tenzan went top rope diving headbutt and got him dead on in the forehead and gave him like a 6-inch gash. And these guys, both of them busted open from that diving headbutt. No one's saying like, oh, what courageous warriors these are. I mean, it's just what they do.
Wrestling is real.
Right.
Who says wrestling isn't real? So it's a double-edged sword, because I have a problem with that, and then it's exactly what you're saying.
Right. Well, it's just the thing that, like, I'm gonna hearken this one back to one of the better Chris Rock stand-ups. Okay, dude's trying to get extra credit for it. I takes care of my kid. You're supposed to take care of your kid. Okay. Oh, I've never been to jail. You ain't supposed to go to fucking jail, and you're not supposed to if you're the number one guy in the company. Punk out on a match because you got a broken nose. So, good for him. He did what he was supposed to do. But let's not break our arms trying to pat ourselves on the back here, giving him credit. Like, he did something that any single other person in that company wouldn't have done.
And then that's the beef with one of the people you had on Twitter?
It wasn't that. It was just, in general, like someone said something about Cena. I think I might even have been before he broke his neck. It was in regards to like, you know, how he's putting on all these, like, I don't think he couldn't understand why people were hating on Cena, which I have a real problem with that term. And because of like all these great matches he's put on ever since he's done this United States, championship open challenge thing. And granted, yeah, he's put on a lot of good matches. But again, it's like every single match that he's been in that's been really good has been like one of the top five workers in the world. It's not hard to have a good match with...
In the company. I mean, I know you're saying the world,
Kevin Steen's up there.
Yeah.
Okay. Cesaro's up there.
Yes. Okay.
All
right. I agree.
Okay, and like Ambrose, not top five in the world, but you know he's one of the better workers there is. Sami Zayn, right? I know there's another guy that for whatever reason I'm blanking. Even you know for what it was, like Seth Rollins is as good as there
is. All I know is that this guy is getting outshined by the people that, you know, these workers that he's doing, and he's getting all the credit for it. I mean, I just do not understand how a wrestling fan can try to sit there and say that, oh, Cena's doing all this stuff. What is he doing? He's allowing guys to make him look good instead of the other way around. I mean, I think that the novelty of some guy having a great match with John Cena and you're looking going like, wow, this guy's really good. Wow, Cena put him over because he allowed him to look good. These guys have better matches without John Cena. You know, I'd rather see Kevin Owens fight Seth Rollins or Dolph Ziggler fight Cesaro. And if they allowed these guys to have that long of a match and the match actually meant something, or these guys were positioned in a way where if they lost, it would be a huge thing. I just don't think you can kind of go with the whole smoke and mirrors, and that's all really John Cena is now. I mean, people can say like, well, he can wrestle better than Hulk Hogan. It's like, well, good. You know, same thing going back to your Chris Rock thing. You're supposed to wrestle better than Hogan, and so that's just kind of, you know, I think that's, you know, where my vitriol for John Cena comes from is just since he lacks in a lot of different areas. You're trying to it's like when you have, say, we both coach and we coach kids, right? And the kid that you're coaching just sucks. You know, they suck and they don't have it. And it could be baseball too, right? They're terrible. But you try to find small little things that they're good at, and you're like, oh, you know, you can build on this and everything like that. If you're the number one guy in the company, we shouldn't be able to try to find like good little things that you're doing and just exponentiate it to how great he is to pat him on the back to say, oh, he's so great. He was given this position. He was given it. He didn't earn it. It was given to him. He has never earned a goddamn thing in that company. It was given to him. And I don't care what anybody says. And so if something was given to him, it's like the same thing, right? The guy that earns it, the guy that earns it, even though if he doesn't win or doesn't win, it's like he himself is a winner because he has been successful. He's had a fight, an uphill battle all the time, and now he's somewhat successful, right? Whenever you give something to a guy and he's never earned it, he is never going to make anything better. He can get by, and he can maybe do something good, whether it's a good match or not. But I would rather have a guy that has gone through the ranks and has paid his dues instead of a guy like John Cena. I can really sit here and say, and I would like to anybody to disagree with me. What dues has John Cena paid? He hasn't paid any dues whatsoever. He's never been buried. He's always been pushed to the top. Am I wrong with that?
No. Like the closest thing that he ever had to a burial was they didn't let him have the world title for a year, and he still won 90% of his matches and main evented 80% of the pay per views.
That was more like 90. But yeah,
and that was the closest thing that
I think he main evented every single pay per view in that year. I mean, CM Punk was a champion. He was the second to last match, and John Cena pretty much headlined every pay per view.
Could be. It's around. I'm trying to, you know.
You're trying to do the exact same thing that I'm telling that people shouldn't do.
No. What I'm trying to do is that for that person that's going to come in and say, no, he did 11 out of 12. So I gave myself some wiggle room. Is what I did. So like here's the thing, and I think this is, and I think it kind of came out of this conversation that ended up being a good conversation where I was saying my piece about John Cena, and the other guy was kind of, we were responding back and forth, and like he was saying, like, John Cena is one of the best workers in the company, which I vehemently disagreed with, but it came down to how one defines, like, a worker, is what it came down to. And I think that's a lot what it is. So I think if you're comparing him on the scale to, like what's the category of guy he's in? He's in that category of, like, a Hulk Hogan guy. Maybe, like, a Lex Luger guy. Maybe, like, a Sting. Yeah, he's better workers than all of those guys. But none of those guys were good workers, right? So, and they were just guys that got pushed and stayed on top for quite a long time. In the category of guys that are just straight workers, like your Bret Harts, like your Chris Benoit's, like your Jericho's, like he doesn't compete. And I can run off a list of probably 50 guys that wrestle circles around him. But the thing is, John Cena's not a terrible sports entertainer. Just he's nowhere near as good as the spot that he's in dictates. So it's like, if he was like a regular guy, like a mid-card guy, like he'd had a couple of runs and then he'd had to go back and do his thing, he would be perfectly fine and there would be no problem with it. The problem is, he doesn't deserve to hold the spot that he holds and have such a stranglehold on it because there's so many guys that are better than him. If he was within that mix of guys and bubbled up every couple of years and had his thing, I don't think anybody would have any problem with it.
And I think that's what the problem is that a lot of people have. That's why people say John Cena sucks, is exactly what you said, is that, and kind of what I said too, is that he hasn't paid his dues, and the whole thing is
no, he did, because his nose was broken.
His nose is broken, so he paid his dues.
Yeah.
There was a time when John Cena was first starting out, and, you know, I always kind of harken back to that match he had with the Big Show at a SummerSlam, and you're looking at this guy going, okay, this guy, you know, he can have something. And he was a guy to look out for, and you know when he finally gets there, it's funny. It's like, you know, people just lambasted Roman Reigns for getting any type of push because he was handpicked or whatever like that. Well, John Cena's been handpicked for how long? And you have a divide of probably, you can say 50-50. I really think that wrestling, and this is me going to be an old time snob. I think wrestling, as good as the Attitude Era was, I think it was also bad for the wrestling fan in general because you had all these guys or all these people that never watched wrestling when it wasn't popular. You know, we've had to sit through, you know, so many bad wrestlers, but we've got to see a lot of great wrestling angles too. But then you just have all it's kind of like the same thing when you listen to sports talk radio, right? And the really bad sports radio hosts still take calls from anybody, and like today. Like, you know, they're talking about the Giants, the San Francisco Giants, and one guy is just going, you know, he's like, I'm going to be really mad if they don't make any moves, you know, to try to make a championship run. You know, Brian Sabian is going to be on the clock, and everybody's going to be mad. I'm sitting there going, like, dude, I'm like, you guys won two championships in the past 3 years.
Three out of five
championships.
And it hurts me to say that.
But you know what I'm saying? And here's the thing is, like, you don't know how to win. You don't know what it means to be a winner, right? I'm a Yankees fan, and the Yankees are in first place. And I'm sitting going, like, this team isn't that good, but they are in first place. And I'm getting to the point where I'm going, like, hey, this might be something, because as bad as the team they have, they're still winning. And it's just kind of the same thing when the Giants won their first out of three. I had a Yankee shirt on. I went to a car wash to get my car washed, and I had a Yankees t-shirt on or whatever, and the lady taking the, it was the day after the Giants won, and the lady goes, oh, the Yankees. She's like, ah. I'm like, well, what team do you like? She's like, I like the Giants. And I was like, well, didn't you just win the World Series? She's like, yeah. I'm like, so what are you so mad about? She's like, you know what? She's like, I guess you're right. I said, and then I couldn't let it go. I was like, you know the way you feel right now? She's like, yeah. I'm like, that's the way I get to feel every single season. So that's what it is, you know, and so you just have, like, all these kind of people that kind of harness onto one thing, and all of a sudden they're true blue fans, but they're not really fans because they let PR people tell them what to like, what not to like, and that's really what I think wrestling fans, for the most part, are. They're not true, I mean, they enjoy the product, but they're not steeped enough in watching wrestling to really appreciate or evaluate someone of John Cena's caliber,
right.
and then that's like the other thing too, is like when John Cena's nose got broken, I tweeted to you and I said, how long do you think Cole's gonna say how great John Cena is because he broke his nose, and everybody's gonna lap it up, And so, that, I mean, you had this, you know, you had this guy going, I don't know why they don't like Cena. It's like, well, this is the reason why, because he hasn't paid his dues, and everything that you just said is that he's put in a position, he hasn't shined in the position that he is. There's more to that position than winning all the time.
Yeah, I mean, and that kind of in some cases hurts the position when all you do is win, like, year after year after year.
I mean,
I think people don't even understand, like, what did it take to get John Cena to the top, right? And I think they don't, like, they can, it's easy, you know, you, like, being wrestling is like this pseudo-sport, right? Like, when you're talking to real sports and you're talking about your Yankees and whatnot, right? I mean, is it 27 or 28 now?
28.
28 world championships speaks for itself in true sport, okay? But in wrestling, if you want the guy to have the most title reigns ever, you just keep giving it to him. But that doesn't mean that he's actually done anything to deserve that, right? The thing that people kind of forget about John Cena is how did John Cena become the number one guy? Because The Rock left, Austin got hurt, and Brock Lesnar left. And there was nobody else. And then that was it. That was they had nobody else. You know, I'd say, I guess the only other guys at the time would have been a very young Randy Orton.
You could put Edge in that position too, but look at Edge's career as compared to John Cena's career.
And
who's more respected?
Yeah, and the thing with Edge is at that point in time, he had that thing where Vince McMahon, you know, he's not going to let a guy that's 230 pounds be his world champion. And that was it. There was nobody, and he was the only guy left. And it's like The Rock was too talented to stay in the WWE. And John Cena was like the girlfriend that's a 6.5 that the guy just got dumped by his hot girlfriend. And he's like, I know this girl's not going to leave me, so I'm going to tie my wagon to it. And they've stuck to it, and, you know, more power to Vince McMahon. You know, he's been able to make a lot of money off the guy and been successful with him, but it's not making the business any better.
And he's tried to cross over John Cena. You know, he's tried to put him in the movie roles with the Marine and that poor gas attendant that's died 500 times in the same movie. And he's been given the same opportunities that The Rock has. And I guess what you can kind of say is that Hollywood's like the great divider, right? If you make it in Hollywood and you're successful in Hollywood, it's because you have something. John Cena, he's even failed at trying to cross over WWE. I mean, Stone Cold was a great crossover. Hulk Hogan with the NWO run, that crossed over like crazy. And the same, I mean, we all look at The Rock and we know where the Rock has gone. I mean, was he bumpy when he first came out? Did he do some movies you're kind of scratching your head going like, oh, what's going on? But he persevered. You know, he broke his nose too with the Tooth Fairy, right? And the Tooth Fairy bombed. There's a couple other movies that bombed, and then all of a sudden he found his niche and he took off with it. Mm-hmm. Even John Cena trying to be that crossover character, he can't cross over. He doesn't cross over to the mass media. You know, he's put in the position of Hulk Hogan, right? And if you go to anybody, like say any 45 or 50 year old mother, and go, hey, what do you think about John Cena? They're going like, who the heck is John Cena?
I disagree.
Okay.
Only because, like, he does, like, that's where they put him. They put him on, like, the morning talk show circuit, right? So, and I think what it is, I think, you know, he's personable enough with the people on those shows. Like, I know he's been on whatever the show that Regis used to host several times. I think, my guess is, like, he's pretty friendly with Strahan. So I know periodically he's on there quite a bit. So I think that your 40 whatever female demographic does know him. And I'm sure.
But I've gotten asked by, like, you know, by, like, my friends' moms and stuff, and, you know, like, she knew that I would watch a pay per view or whatever. She's like, hey, did Hulk Hogan win? Right? She wanted to know, like, Hulk Hogan winning the title back. Everything was right in the world, right?
Well, I'm not saying they care. I'm just saying they know who he is.
But what I'm saying is I guess I phrased it wrong. Was that there's more kind of an ownership of, like, saying, like, a Hulk Hogan, because, like, Hulk Hogan is, like, kind of like us growing up in the Bay Area, right? It's like, okay, you know, 49ers won four championships, right? So whenever...
Five,
but four during the 80s, and I apologize. Because in 94, that was our championship. You know, that was us believing in that team, and everybody kind of went on board. But it's kind of like the thing, you know, okay, you know, 49ers win, Ronald Reagan is president, you know, Hulk Hogan is champion. You know, it's like wrestling was at that point in Americana where people knew who Hulk Hogan was, and it's like, oh, Hulk Hogan's not the champion, and when he won the championship, you felt good for the guy, right? It's like, oh yeah, he deserves it, right? And that's the whole thing, is that John Cena's put in that Hulk Hogan spot. He's never been able to do anything with it. And the sad thing is that he has more talent than Hulk Hogan does. But what Hulk Hogan was able to do was he was able to tap in the feeling and the culture of what the U.S. was at that time, and be like a poster, or like be like the poster child, or the Uncle Sam poster of what wrestling is supposed to be and what it means to be like an American. And people bought onto that. John Cena can't do that. He's a better wrestler, way better wrestler, but his promos are so bad. And when it comes down to it, when it comes to a guy like Kevin Owens that deserves to beat him, he can't let him beat him. And when I watched this Raw, I didn't watch anything with John Cena in it. And normally I don't watch anything with John Cena in it as well. But at the same time, if you have John Cena versus Seth Rollins before Kevin Owens happened, I'll probably watch Seth Rollins and John Cena. And when John Cena beats Seth Rollins, I'm like, okay, at least, you know, I'm making, you know, this is the first time I'm watching WWE where I'm not making excuses for the product. Because before I'd make excuses for the product because of what we're doing now, because I'm saying, hey, wait this out. I would have watched a Seth Rollins and John Cena match before he beat Kevin Owens two out of three, mind you. Okay,
with a tap out.
With a weak tap out that didn't make any sense. This time around, I didn't watch it because I knew John Cena was going to win. Or even if it was a count out or whatever it was, I really didn't care. And is, you know, I fast forward, I saw that he won. I was just like, yeah, you know, yeah, of course he wins. And so I'm done with that. I'm done watching him. I'm not watching him anymore.
And just to add on, finish that thought you had about Hulk Hogan too. The other thing that, and it's kind of funny because we don't really talk about Hulk Hogan that much.
And all of a sudden,
we can
talk plenty about him right now.
Right. But now we're not even talking about that. We're talking about him as an actual wrestler. I would just say, like, Hulk Hogan also, when he realized that what he was doing was getting stale, he faced that, and he found a new character and completely reinvented himself, and pretty much, I'm not going to say single-handedly, but was a huge part of bringing wrestling back in the 90s because of the NWO.
I think he was the main reason why wrestling came back in the 90s. I think him joining the NWO did it, and then once he joined the NWO... NWO, I've always said that Hulk Hogan has saved wrestling twice.
Right.
And I'm not going to take... I'll never take that. I think Hulk Hogan is the main reason why. And I think the Attitude Era takes off because WWF was forced to...
Because of what WCW was doing.
Yeah, and the WWE was forced to become better. And then you have a Bret Hart become a heel. I mean, even like Bret Hart becomes a heel. And I'm looking back at this heel run now, and I'm going like, you know, that's probably one of the best heel runs... That's up there with Hulk Hogan as in terms of a heel run. I thought Bret Hart did a great job as a heel. Mm-hmm. And it sucks that he went to WCW because I thought he could have done a lot more as that heel character. And it would have been a lot more interesting. I mean, that time was like perfect. I mean, everything was hitting all cylinders. Mm-hmm. And Hulk Hogan, that does not happen without Hulk Hogan. And the one thing that I can say with Cena is that Cena is dealing with a lot more... In terms of what media is now, I mean, there's so many media outlets. I mean, even the way stories are told, like, you know, you don't go on Facebook much, right?
No.
But every time, you know, but most people do. And there's always stories. And it's the reason why what happened with, and here I go, you know, here he goes. But what happened with journalism was that journalism, you know, like newspaper journalists held themselves at such high esteem, right? And they pretty much got rid of all yellow journalism. Right, like writing a headline to draw you into the story or whatever. I mean, that was looked down upon. Now that's the norm. I mean, like Facebook, I'm on Facebook, and it's like, look what this little girl does, or like, here's 10 reasons why you shouldn't do this. Number 5 will shock you. And it's like, man, it's like listening to Gorilla Monsoon on the mic. Dude. You know, it's like, man, I've had so many miscarriages of justice going on. I get shocked like 55 times a day. I don't know how my heart's still beating because I get shocked so much. You know, so John Cena does have to compete in that environment where media has just exploded, social media has exploded, and it's very hard to kind of be probably drawing like 70% or 80% of the media when you have so many media outlets going on. And the only way you can do it is release a sex tape like Kim Kardashian and become a star that way. You know, So he does have a problem in that sense.
You gonna make me defend Kim like you made me defend Gail Kim last week over here?
You don't have to defend Kim. Hey, if she needs to sleep her way to the top, if that's what she needs to do, and if her mom tells her to do it, I mean that's the society that we live in. You know, it's like I don't look bad at her for it. I mean, she's just doing what she's doing. I'm just trying to say that it's harder for him to kind of have a corner of media that is just falling because there's so many different outlets now. There's so many different outlets to gather your attention. And that's why you talk about wrestling. You know, wrestling ratings are down because there's so many other things. I mean, you have the home improvement network, HGN. You know, like guys watch HGN because they want to make their houses better. I mean, there's so many different avenues to watch TV. It's not just wrestling on Monday nights now. There's so many different programs. You're dealing with HBO. You're dealing with Showtime. And wrestling really takes a back seat now. So we can sit here and criticize, like, hey, he was no Hulk Hogan, but Hulk Hogan didn't have to deal with all the media that was going on. But what I do want to say is I think if you put Hulk Hogan now in his prime, I think if you put Rock in his prime, if you put Austin in his prime, even Mankind in his prime, I think they blow up even more.
Right.
Because they had it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the talent that those guys, and I don't know if you mentioned Steve Austin, but Steve Austin as well.
I did.
The talent that those guys all had would translate to any generation, any era. And quite frankly, if John Cena had to go head up against any one of those guys, he would be a mid-carder at best. And that's just the reality of the situation.
So I have a couple things I want to bring up with you.
Are these Cena related?
No, we're getting away from John Cena, unless you want to keep on talking about John Cena.
I kind of did.
It has to do with John Cena. I mean, but go ahead.
All right. So it's sort of Cena related, and it's just sort of a pet peeve of mine, and it kind of reared its ugly head here in these like little conversations I was having, and it's really just like sticking in my craw, as it were. People,
it's chapping your hide.
It's chapping my ass, is what it's doing.
It steams your beans.
So, yeah, that's a good one right there.
I stole that from Night Shift. You know what really steams my beans? Go ahead.
Was some guy? I'm making this like reasoned out argument of things that I dislike about Cena.
And he says scoreboard. Scoreboard.
No. just the same.
Yeah.
Hater.
Hater. You're a hater.
You can't reason with a John Cena hater. So, like, hater and like, I'm not going to get into who it is, but there's a local radio guy that is also on a crusade attacking the word hater, and I hate the word hater, okay, because, like, it's dismissed, like, people that use the word hater, they have no argument, right? They can't make a reasonable argument, they don't even know why they think what they do, they just throw the word hater out, and then they want to drop the mic and walk away.
Even the word hater has changed, because when we were, like, 20 or whatever, if you were a hater, you were a bitch, you know, and they would, pretty much, if you were called a hater, they're pretty much calling you a bitch. So if you're going to call someone a hater, you better get ready to fight, right?
Yeah.
And then now it's just like, yo, you're a hater.
Right.
Because I can't come with a good argument, so you're a hater.
Right, exactly.
So like Gail Kim, that's what you did to me last week. I'm like, Gail Kim sucks. She's like, man, you're just a hater.
I never used the word hater.
You never did.
Okay. So I think, we could come up with a list, and maybe we'll go back and forth. And I would like to just lay out like a handful, maybe 5 to 10 reasoned arguments why we dislike John Cena.
Okay.
So that any chump that wants to come on and say, oh, you're just a hater.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to say that we're wrong, fine, be my guest, but you better come with a reasoned argument to say why this guy is really good at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start off saying that...
Well, we've already started. We said that he hasn't earned it, mm-hmm. right?
He was the right guy at the right time when all the other talented guys that could carry the company left.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, those are two things that we've already started with. You got any others?
Well, you're ready to roll.
Okay, I'm ready to roll. Okay, so the other is, weakest shoulder block in the history of wrestling.
Now you're just being a hater. He has a 2 foot vertical. It's lazy.
I don't care about the jumping or whatever. Like, wrestling is supposed to give an appearance that there's some kind of fight. There is zero impact. He like
who's a better wrestler, Ultimate Warrior or John Cena?
John Cena.
Yeah. So, but the Ultimate Warrior did a monster shoulder block.
Yeah.
I mean that's the standard. If and that's the whole thing is that if you're going to try to say that you're the best, right? If you're going to try to say that you're the best, if other people are going to try to say that he's the best, then learn how to do a very basic move called shoulder block.
Yeah, and I think it's
like a shoulder shrug.
Yeah, and I think this is part of what the argument, like the context of the argument we're making is not saying that John Cena is like some like the worst wrestler that ever walked the earth, but that he, if you look at the things that he does and what he's done through his career, that he is nowhere near, like he's nowhere near the top of this profession.
So you
go ahead and throw one out.
So
now.
You have shoulder block. Yeah,
shoulder block.
Right place, right time, and I said that he hasn't earned a spot, and the spot that he's in, like a Hulk Hogan spot, he doesn't even do that well. My biggest one, probably the biggest two, but I'll start off with one, is that he does not put anyone over. He does not make guys. And you can point to this and say, oh, well, he made CM Punk. He did not make CM Punk. CM Punk was already made. He has out of everything I've seen, he has done the job for John Cena and Daniel Bryan. Those are the two guys that he's done jobs for. But he hasn't done jobs for him because these guys were way better and they were carrying the company long before he was, but he gets all the credit for it.
Yeah, I think Daniel Bryan falls into the same category as CM Punk because he was completely over with
everybody. That's what I just said, right? Yeah.
Well, you said you kind of said. I'll give him this.
I did say that.
Okay.
I said that both those guys were already over.
Okay. He put Sheamus over, so I will give him that. He definitely put Sheamus over.
Okay.
And to a certain degree, I'm going to say he put Edge over. I know you kind of disagree with that, but I think he should get some credit for being the guy that brought Edge from a mid-card guy that everybody liked to being like a legitimate world champion. But we're talking about two guys in like 12 years of wrestling.
Okay. How did Edge beat him? For the championship,
I don't have any.
It was Money in the Bank, right?
It may have been, but the thing I don't remember. There's no one specific match with him and Edge that I remember, but I just remember there was like a 2 or 3 year period where John Cena was beating everybody, and Edge had his number. So Edge would come out, and Edge would beat him periodically, and he'd be the guy to take the title away from John, so Cena could go back on the chase. But it was always like no one else could touch Cena, but Edge just had his number, and I think that was it's good when, like...
Okay, so let me rephrase like, it then. Let me rephrase this thing, okay? He has put some people over, okay? He is no Ric Flair. Right. How about that? Can I say that?
Yeah.
Ric Flair made stars.
Yeah. Two guys over the span of, like, 12 years is not anywhere near enough. If you're the number one guy in a company and, you know, you have a secure spot to the point where you've already been built up that you're pretty much bulletproof. There's no loss you can have. There's nothing you could do that all of a sudden, like, would make you start looking bad in the company, right? Okay, my turn?
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to be the number one guy in this business, and the guy can't figure out how to call a fucking spot quietly. Okay? Rookie divas know how to hide calling a spot better than John Cena. Okay, literally in that last, the third Owens match, there's a part where they both, like, they had some kind of collision where they're both laying on the ground. Cena's in the middle of the ring. Owens is laying a little bit closer to the hard camera. Cena's like spread eagle, like lay down his back, turns his head straight to Owens, and just starts talking. It's like, you know where the fucking hard camera is. You're staring right into it. What are you doing? Hey, go up to the top rope so I can throw you. It's like, everybody can do a better job. Like, every time they, like, it's obvious what they do. Like, they go do some kind of lockup. And then they duck their head down underneath their arm. And you know they're talking, but at least you can't see it. Just, if you know anything about wrestling, you know that what's going on. This is the part where they start communicating. Dude just, every single time, just lays out wide open in the middle of the ring, just bumping his gums, as Steve Austin would say. Or yells it so you can literally hear it in certain occasions. It's like, at least try. I mean, try. At least try to, if you're supposed to be the best guy there is, at least try to be good at some of the most basic, simple things that there are in wrestling.
Okay. Yeah, I totally agree with that. So that leads up to something else that lends into what I'm going to say now. It's his integrity, because I don't know why he does that. I think, and the reason why I say this is that he does not have respect for fans. He does not have respect for the wrestling fan. And I don't know if it's little kids. I don't know with what it is, but he always tries, whenever he does his promo, he always tries to wink at you, saying that, you know it's fake. I know it's fake, but I, here I am. I'm going to I'm going to poke fun at you. So when he does lay on Sprawled Eagle, Sprawled Eagle, is that right?
Spread
Eagle. I'm sorry. I like Sprawled Eagle too. that should be the name of our podcast, Sprawled Eagle. When he does do that, I don't know if he's doing that on purpose, or I don't know if he's doing it because he sucks that bad. So, and I don't know if he does it on purpose because he sucks that bad, and he gives us a reason to say, like, oh, you suck so hard that you have to, yell this out. He tries to break the fourth wall all the time in wrestling, and he does not have the charisma, he does not have the lyrical panache to pull that off. I don't even think he knows what the word panache means, but he does not have respect for fans. He makes a joke out of the fakeness of wrestling, and he tries to, put his arm around, so like, hey man, this is fake, right? I know this is fake, so hey, let's just make a mockery out of this whole thing. A lot of promos he does that. He does that a lot, and that's probably the other really good. Well, it's not, because I have so many problems with him, but I think that's a very important point where, when he does call a spot out, does he think we're idiots? And I think he does. I think there's a small part. I think he does it on purpose. I think that's like the million-dollar question. Do you do that stuff on purpose to kind of make us feel stupid? And he has such a reputation of all of his promos of treating us like garbage that I think he does do that on purpose.
All right. I mean, I don't think that I have much to add to that. I know you've always maintained that his breaking of the fourth wall like really bothers you. And yeah, I think the bottom line of it is he doesn't have the charisma to pull it off. Like, there's been guys to break the fourth wall periodically, but I think they pick and chose spots to do it, and they also had the charisma to pull it off.
There is no excuse for letting everybody. First of all, there's no excuse for saying that out loud for everybody to hear, because the people in the front row can hear that, right? There's no excuse for that. Right. You have a job to do. Your job is to orchestrate violence in a way that's believable. That is your job. You owe it to the guy in the front row to make it seem totally real. Even though we know it's all fake, it is your job to be a wrestler, to pretend that it's real. There is no excuse for him doing that. And the whole thing is that he's done it on multiple occasions. And he should be able to watch his matches. I think he does watch his matches. And if he sees himself speaking out like that, right, and doing that stuff, if that was you, what would be your first reaction?
Yeah.
I got to stop doing
that. You got to stop doing that.
But right. He does it all the time.
Exactly.
And then that's where I think he doesn't respect the fan he doesn't respect the wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So my next one would be, and I went specific with that shoulder block because I have a real problem with it. But the next thing, just in general, his moveset, very stale, nothing like highly impactful. Like his AA is like a really weak version of a Death Valley driver. That said, then he's tried to add a couple of moves here into the repertoire recently, and they're just absolutely terrible. Like this springboard stunner thing. Like if he's trying, I don't think he's trying to do any kind of homage to Steve Austin, but it's a joke of a move. Okay, you bounce off. Like first of all, he botches it at least 90% of the time.
He botched it last week.
I'll give myself some wiggle room there. It makes the other wrestler look like an idiot. Because he's just standing there waiting for a guy to basically fall back into his chest, never is able to hook the chin, and then the guy has to just like lean over, even though no one's pulled his head down into the shoulder, which the stunner is supposed to be. So you want to expand this moveset, okay? And I'm not even going to get into the whole thing. We talked about the Cesaro thing last week, right? But you're supposed to be like a 265, 270 pound power guy. And your two new moves that you're adding to your repertoire are essentially luchador moves. A springboard stunner that is completely unbelievable and never gets hit properly. And then a like somersault powerbomb that involves the other guy basically doing a backflip while you sit on his back. And that move, it just looks like shit. And I'm not saying that because Cena's doing it. I've maintained always that that's a terrible move. when a luchador does it, and at least I can buy it, like, when you got two guys that are, like, 170 pounds, one might be, like, some people can make it look more or less believable, but not that, not guys at that size, and he definitely doesn't pull it off. So, you know, they're going to allow him to do whatever he wants to do with these moves, and why don't you come up with some good power moves? You're supposed to be a big, strong guy at 270, 265 pounds. Why don't you come up with some real power moves?
So, do you want me to be safe, or you want me to say the way I really feel? Okay, and if you think I'm starting
be,
to
be real, son.
If you think I'm going down a road that's really dark, you can stop me right off the bat.
Okay.
Another major problem: he's a Wigger, and not only that, but he's a Wigger from 1994, 1995, and he hasn't changed his gimmick. You want me to keep on going?
I don't want you to go a Colin Cowherd over here.
I'm not going to go Colin Cowherd, but I think that has a lot to do with it too. Here's the thing, and when I was, you know, 17, 18, 19, right? And the only thing is what I'm going to say is that we did a lot. Me and you did a lot of fighting in terms of, you know, when rap was kind of seen as like this dangerous thing, right? And I don't want to, you know, to take from another Chris Rock thing of like keeping it real, right? Like if you say that you're keeping it real, you're not keeping it real because you don't know what real is. What I'm trying to say, I know this is a touchy subject, okay? But the whole thing is that I think he dumbs down part of a culture that me and you have kind of, you know, me and you have lived, right? We've had to live what he tries to emulate. And it never comes across right. It's to the point. I put him in the same class of Family Feud in the 1990s, right? They had Ray Combs as the Family Feud guy, and you know he would go and ask like each person like, oh, you know, what are your hobbies? What do you like to do? This, that, and this. And there's like some like white lady from Connecticut, and she's like, oh, I like to rap. She's like, oh, he's like, really, you like to rap? And so she starts rapping. You know, she does like this little rap thing. And it was so bad, but that's how she sees our culture, right? That's how she interprets our culture. And what I'm trying to say with Cena is that Cena tries to emulate something that he sees. It's kind of like the whole thing where, you talk about Kill Bill 2, where Tarantino allows Carradine to talk about Superman. And he talks about, you know, when Bruce Wayne dresses up as Batman, he's Batman. When, you know, whoever this, you know, Spider-Man dresses up as Spider-Man, he's Spider-Man. Where with Superman, Superman's already Superman. So when his alter ego, his ego is Superman. His alter ego is Clark Kent. So what is Clark Kent? Clark Kent is timid. He's weak. He's not strong-willed. That's how he sees our
humanity.
And that's what I'm trying to say with Cena is that, you know, the spin belt. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you're going to have a spin belt? And the whole thing is that, why are you even doing this? Because, you know, are there black people that like to watch wrestling? Yeah, they do. They do like watching wrestling. But, I mean, that is such like a cliche. It's such like a substandard of what that culture is. And he tries to emulate that, and he has no idea what the hell he's doing. And I think when he does that, that really, you know, because I talk about he tries to break the fourth wall. He insults my culture. He insults the culture that I grew up in. And the whole thing is that when we're growing up, if some guy tried to do that, some guy that didn't know what the heck he was doing, and he tried to come in my circle or my cipher, if you really want to get old school like that, if he tried to come into that, he'd get his ass kicked. Okay, but that's his reflection. That's how he sees that. To me, the way he was and when he came up with all the stuff and the chain gang and all that stuff, like the chain gang, okay, I can get with you on the chain gang, okay? But the spinning wheel stuff and then trying to rap and you're trying to, I don't know what the hell you're trying to do. I don't know who the fuck you are. I don't know where you're coming from, but the whole thing is that you're making a mockery of stuff that I grew up, stuff that I fought, okay? Perceptions that we have both fought growing up when it wasn't readily acceptable. And he's making money off of the fight that me and you did and the fight that our generation did. And that's what I have a real problem with. Did you kind of understand where I'm coming from with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd boil it down to saying something like, And then this kind of goes back to one of our first points, that, like, he's been handed everything, but a great part of his character is claiming that, like, everyone's tried to hold him down from day one, and he's had to fight for all these things that are, it's clearly a fabrication. Like, I think that's, and that's kind of what he kind of played off, right? Looking at the time he came around, I mean, he was essentially playing Marky Mark, right? And then that's kind of where he went from that. But, you know, even expanded, what did they do to try to give him credibility? They made him partner up with Crime Time, right? And they do other certain things like this.
I know the word brings up a lot of, like, emotions, whatever it is. And I know it's not used a lot because it's kind of frowned upon. And here's an example I want to use, right? Like, so our friend Mike Oz, who writes for Yahoo Sports, and this is not representing Yahoo Sports. This is the way I feel, right? This guy is like straight B-boy, right? You know, when we were both in college, I mean, he knew more about rap than probably anybody else did. He wasn't trying to be anything that he wasn't. He was who he was because he embraced that type of culture. I don't think you need to be black to embrace that type of culture. I don't think you need to be black to be a B-boy. And nobody even knows what a B-boy is anymore. But that's kind of what I'm kind of drawn from, right? Everything that John Cena does is fake. Like, you know, like, you know, our boy Oz, like, he has his own radio show. He was big into rap way back when. I mean, just, you know, it's like, even now, it's like, hey, like, you know, what do you think about this guy? What do you think about that guy? I don't agree with him anymore because I think the new rappers that are out now, I think they all suck.
Well, I think his taste has always been different.
Because it's
a lot more mainstream.
Because he immersed himself in that culture. Me and you, we immersed ourselves in that culture, but we I think helped grow the culture, right? I mean, we were there. And we were there since Grandmaster Flash, you know, and we were there when rap was kind of seen as this little, like, rinky-dink little thing. And then all of a sudden, you know, you start coming out with Public Enemy, you know, you can throw X-Clan in there, you can throw NWA in there. And then you get into the Enlightened Era where you have Tribe Called Quest puts out some of the best. I mean, you listen to a Tribe album, it's like one of the best albums ever. It's like, so we were there on the ground floor. You know, I think Oz came in when the floor broke the ceiling. And he was able to kind of see all this stuff and really embrace different things that we did. And what I'm saying with Cena is that Cena is making money off of it. You know, that's his main goal is to make money off of that type of culture. And I really think that whole, like, it kills me every time that I see CM Punk with that belt and he has a spinner belt. I mean, it's just idiotic. I just don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. And it's like a slap. It's a slap in the face, and I just don't know what this guy stands for because he's a pimp, you know. He pimps out whatever's popular, and that's what he is.
Goddamn pimps! They're all in it together. Let me see. I think I did have one more. Let me see if I can recall that because I had to focus on what you were saying for a minute there. I'm looking up at the ceiling as we speak. Let me see. I mean, I guess we kind of danced around a little bit, but his mic work isn't very good.
Yeah.
He has.
We can't say anything without talking about his mic work.
Right. I mean, he has like three or four like standard issue like promos that he's going to cut. But the thing is, like, he more than anything is kind of stuck in being this PG character, but then he wants to sometimes, like, go out and kind of be something more than that. And what he ends up doing is just coming out with just, like, the corniest jokes that you could possibly think of. And then, for whatever reason, pretty much, I mean, because they need to continue to make John Cena look strong, whether it's in the ring or on the mic, these guys, they don't respond with anything, right? Like, Seth Rollins, like, when he's going against other guys, like, he can quip with anybody, right? He's funny. He can go off the top of the head. Kevin Owens, we saw a lot the same in the very beginning. As the program went on, like, when John Cena would say some stupid joke, like, there wasn't much of a response. And that's the thing. Instead, this is, I think, the overall thing. Like, with his mic work.
Well, I got some more, so don't.
I'm not going to delve off too much, but it's just, like,
I got a whole list out the door.
Got a whole bag with his name on it.
I'm like Jericho with the 1,000 holds.
Instead of having other guys that can try to elevate and see whether he can like then match and elevate with them, they just told everybody that, well, you're not going to be allowed to exceed what John Cena does, so just make sure you don't make Cena look bad out there so we can keep running him out in here and saying he's the best there ever was.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, that's, yeah. Here's the problem I have with his mic work as well. And before I do that, his slide into the ring, where he kind of sits on his ass and slides in, that's terrible. I mean, like, if you're going to slide in the ring like Edge did, okay? I mean, do that. I mean, I'd rather have you see you slide in the ring and hump the ground like Edge used to, you know. But I mean, he does like this.
He doesn't have the personality.
He does like a side saddle. Yeah, he's like a woman that rides a horse side saddle.
Dane Delaney with the third leg.
With the third leg, yeah. Well, she gave me a third leg too. But that's.
I think you should have gone the other way around. Nevertheless, continue.
But I gave her a third leg. Okay, I wish. Okay, so all the sliding in the ring aside, his bread and butter is, and the one thing that nobody can take away from him is that he hits the 4 to 9 year old market, right? For like 4 to 10, you can probably say like the 4 to 10 year old market. That's his bread and butter fan. Okay, that's his bread and butter. It's like whenever you go to a wrestling event, or if you watch wrestling, they show some little kid all dressed up in the neon stuff and everything. My whole thing is that if that's your bread and butter, there's no way in hell that you should say you're going to kick someone's ass. Like, I'm going to kick your ass. I mean, if your demographic is 4 to 10 and those are your biggest fans, don't teach them how to flipping cuss. You know, I can just imagine being the dad of some kid. First of all, my kid's dressed up as John Cena and whatever it is, and I gotta go through that, and you know, I gotta get heckled by all these people, rightfully so. But I want my kid to have his own hero or whatever it was. I'm lucky that my girls never liked John Cena. I think there was maybe a little bit of a crush from my older one for John Cena for a little bit, and I let that go. But getting back to the point, you shouldn't say you're gonna kick someone's ass. You know, if you're going to be PG like you brought up, then you be PG all the way. Don't try to get some cheap heat by, and see, that's like the whole thing, right? If you want to get cheap heat by going out of character, and the best you can come up with is that you're going to kick your ass, and the way you do it is you yell at the top of your voice, "I'm going to kick your ass," and everybody goes all crazy. I think that's a problem, because if you're going to break that PG barrier, come up with something better than that, right? So that's another huge problem. I mean, every time he says kicks, I think of the children. You know, I believe the children are our future.
I know you feel strongly about that.
Yeah, let them lead the way.
Show them all the beauty they possess inside.
Exactly.
All right. Well, since you kind of you got me thinking again, then in terms of like bringing up his entrance and whatnot, like I mean. And earlier you did call him a pimp. I mean, this dude's like pimping the corniest of merchandise left and right. And like, I think that's, I mean, it's one thing, everyone has their own shirt, they're going to wear it out, right? But this guy comes to the top of the ramp and like pulls out the little towel and point to the little wristbands and oh, I got my Kmart shoes too going. And that even kind of goes back to your whole thing of like the fake living this thug lifestyle. I mean, like, people had to wear Kmart shoes back in the day, right? And it was a kind of embarrassing thing to do. But then this guy's going to be like, oh, like he's giving that image like...
Even when we were poor, we never bought shoes from Kmart. We always had good shoes. Poor people have good shoes, right? We always had good shoes because we get clowned if we didn't. Okay, but go ahead.
But yeah, that kind of goes back to it. But just like his whole pimping of his merch. I mean, his merch is pretty bad. If it's targeted for 9-year-olds and whatnot, so
he said one good T-shirt, just the one.
I don't even recall, but
it was the Nintendo 8-bit Pro Wrestling.
Oh yeah,
that
yeah,
one was
yeah,
good. Yeah. Okay, but that's it. Yeah.
All right.
The other thing too, the big problem I have with him too, is when he was in that whole big kind of saluting stuff, like pretending that you know he was in the army and stuff and everything by doing salutes and stuff. I have another problem with that as well. You were never in the army, you know. If you want to give veterans love or whatever it is, go ahead and do it. Okay, but don't come at me. I mean, go you know. And sometimes he'd go to like a you know some some people in the service and stuff, and he would like and say, "This is the real true man, true hero." I have no problem with that. Don't come at me and don't salute. I mean, give me a break, dude. I don't salute anybody.
He was the Marine.
Yeah, exactly. So and the other problem I have with him is that why the hell are you going to leave your wife somewhere? You know, take her with you. Take your wife with you. Or was that a different movie?
Did he leave her at the gas station right before it blew up or something?
I don't know what happened, but something happened. I don't know. But and why did the gas attendant have to die? That's the biggest problem I have. He kills gas attendants left and right. We done with this?
Sure.
Yeah?
I mean, I think that's a pretty good list. I think. I don't even know how many.
You're a hater, dude. You're a hater.
If anyone would like to proclaim as haters, then I'm more than happy to listen to any kind of reasoned argument to say that any of those things.
He can wrestle. Okay, he can wrestle. He can wrestle. All
right, let me say one more.
He can draw money.
Let me say one more.
Let's put that out of the way.
But let me say one more thing, and then you can run down his list of virtues. No, I guess that's already been said. Good. Sorry.
Yeah.
Good.
No, he can wrestle. He can draw money.
He's not a great wrestler, but he's not an awful.
He can wrestle. He's not a great wrestler, but he can wrestle, and he can draw. Okay, I'm not going to say that he can't, but the whole thing is that he would draw a whole lot more if he lost a lot more. Okay. I'll take the whole wigger thing. He can be a wigger if he wants. I don't care. But you have to lose, and you have to make the company better, and you have to make wrestlers around you better, and you have to give other wrestlers opportunities. Because when they beat you legitimately and they have their run, and then you come back and beat them, guess what happens? You become that much better. He's going to go down as a Bruno Sammartino. Okay, Bruno Sammartino, people love him, right? Bruno Sammartino has no legacy whatsoever. No, none. You know, he can draw. Bruno Sammartino could draw Madison Square Garden. Good for him. Okay? He could somewhat wrestle. He can't wrestle across all the board. He had Bruno Sammartino. I don't care. People say he's great, and that's all there is. He's going to be the next Bruno. He is a Bruno Sammartino. This is a bad time in wrestling with him on top. And I think once he's gone, I think you have a ton of people the scene's going to explode. I think it's not Cena is going to explode. The scene is going to explode. So one thing I this isn't a major kind of discussion, but so I was thinking of the whole kind of Tom Brady thing that's going on with the suspension of 4 games and stuff. And they were talking about the commissioner, right? Roger Goodell and everything. And so I was thinking about the role of commissioner and going like, so this guy was voted by all the owners to kind of enforce what they want, right? He had, you know, that's his legitimacy. He has people to speak to. He has the owners to speak to. And I don't want to get into what the Patriots owner said and all this stuff, what Kraft did. I don't want to get into that argument. But I just find it funny, like the commissioner of any commissioner in wrestling, when they had a commissioner, right? The commissioner technically has to speak. You know, he is hired by the board of directors. He's voted in. How the hell can there be a commissioner in wrestling? I mean, can you imagine like Sergeant Slaughter going to the board of directors during the Attitude Era and going like, you know, well, Shawn Michaels, like, you know, showed his junk on TV. How is that the norm? You know, I just find it funny, like, there's a commissioner in wrestling, and this guy has to go to the board of directors and like, say everything that bad has happened, right? I mean, so it's like violence, right? Like, oh, this, you know, like, yeah, Brock Lesnar, so, Kamish, how come Brock Lesnar brings this car out, and he brings an axe, and he just starts destroying the car, and you have a bunch of lawyers going like, what if he got that axe and turned it on other people? You know, how can Stone Cold come out with something that looks like a gun and hold it to our CEO's head, and then the CEO is like scared for his life, and then he presses the trigger and says bang. You know, I mean, how can this guy answer to all that stuff?
How can Stone Cold come out spraying beer all over the arena? There could be children in the front
room. Yeah, how come Kurt Angle comes out with the milk truck and sprays milk all over the place?
That thing could have been curdled.
When I was driving with it, it just hit me. It's like, can you imagine the commissioner going like, well, this is normally what happens. You know, it's like, yeah, this guy gets his ass kicked. Yeah, that's normal. But, you know, some guy, you know, Brock Lesnar coming out or the King having a bikini contest. how is that okay on our product? I mean, I just want to know who these board of directors are to, like, allow to, like, all this violence to happen. And they hire a commissioner to make sure everything runs smooth.
Well, even more so, I mean, yeah, even more so than that, like, the matches in general, right? With all the, like, you know, underhanded, like, somebody cheats, right, and the referee doesn't catch it, so be it, right? Wouldn't that specifically be the job of the commissioner to say...
Cesaro gate, you know, or New Day gate, you know?
Right, to say, well, that guy, you know, shouldn't have won that match, so he's not going to be the number one contender, because we all saw what happened, right? Isn't that... Wouldn't that be, like, 90% of what the commissioner is supposed to do, adjudicate, like, wrongs?
I just want, you know, if you want, like, TV gold, you got to show a board meeting with the commissioner and all, like, so... You know, when this happened with, why do you allow a person to dress up in a bunny suit and wrestle in the ring? Who is this guy? Is he
under contract?
Is he under contract? Does our insurance cover him? Yeah. Well, I mean, he's a bunny in a suit. I mean, he's just, you know, I just decided to go with it.
All right. Well, since you brought up, like, the controversy and, like, you know, we mentioned his name earlier. I'm not gonna try to sit here and defend anything like that Hogan said, right? And I didn't hear it, you know. I've read or heard people that have read the transcripts or whatever. Here's gonna be the point that I want to make, okay? And it's not to defend him; it's just like to put everything in context. Wrestling is one of the most an industry that. Maybe more than anything else, plays on stereotypes. And there's a lot of people that would say that Vince McMahon might be, like, somewhat of a racist in just the views that he has on certain people. If you look at some of the bookings, the ideas, the roles that they put minorities in, it's very, like, very limiting and very stereotypical roles, right? I'm not trying to come out here and say Vince McMahon is a racist, but I'm saying there's a lot of elements there that would say, like, you know, that was kind of like a common way of thinking within that industry. So, like, I have a little bit of a problem that, like, McMahon is the guy that's the judge, jury, and executioner on something like that. But even more so is if you're going to remove Hulk Hogan from the WWE Hall of Fame and all these things you're going to remove him from, how are you going to still allow Donald Trump to be a WWE Hall of Famer when he's going out and basically saying that all Mexicans are rapists, drug dealers, and murderers? Okay? Like, I mean, that is, you know, at least I know that, you know, I mean, Trump came out and said that, like, on TV, you know, and he hasn't backed down from it. I mean, he's backed that up, like, multiple times, whereas Hogan at least, you know, doesn't make it right, but within, you know, whatever he's going through in some privately, like, conversation in some weirdo whole situation with that whole sex tape thing. I mean, I'm not saying that all, like, yeah, let's just sweep what Hogan did under the rug, but I don't see how you can say that we're not going to tolerate this over here with what Hulk Hogan did, but yeah, Donald Trump's still a Hall of Famer. That makes no sense to me.
I think you just want to get me in trouble. I mean, the whole thing is, this was his own private tape, okay? I don't know how someone got a hold of the tape or whatever it was.
Well, the thing is, you can tell me if I'm wrong.
I don't know, because I
don't think it's his. I think my understanding is the other guy.
Bubba the Love Sponge.
The Love Sponge offered up his wife to Hogan.
Yeah.
And then they secretly recorded this stuff, and then it started getting released. So it wasn't like it was Hogan wanting to make a sex tape, from my understanding. But go ahead.
Well, I, you know, is Hulk Hogan different from a large majority of the population that says that? I mean, I don't even give a fuck if I'm gonna make an excuse for him. I don't care. I mean, this is something that it was a conversation that he what he does in his private life. He has no responsibility to anybody what he does in his private life, what he says in his private life, right? He didn't come out and say this. Like, you talk about Donald Trump, right? Donald Trump has come on, he's coming on a national stage, and this is what he's doing. And because the Mexican population, you know, is different from the African American population. You know, I mean, does the same thing happen? And this is where it gets touchy. And I would like to think that I do have some type of say over this. If he said someone was a wetback, would it be that? I mean, do you think he gets kicked out of the WWE then?
You talking about Trump?
No, I'm talking about Hogan.
Oh,
you know, I mean, we don't know. I mean, because this situation hasn't arisen, and you know that there's one word that you can't say, and that will put you on the wall. But at the same time, like, have black people called me that? Yeah. Have white kids called me that? Yeah. I mean, have I used the word? Yeah. But I mean, but I'm not going to come out. I'm not going to come out and say like, oh, I can say it, this, that, and this. But there's times that I've said it, right? I mean, you know, we're growing up or whatever it is, and it was the, you know, we talk about immersing ourselves in the culture, but I would never, you know, I'm not going to say the reasons why I did it, the reasons why I didn't. I mean, if you want to know the reason why I did it, go listen to the Tribe Called Quest album on Midnight Marauders. There's a song that's called that, to kind of explain what the reasoning behind that word. Is it a word that I agree with? No, I don't, but I say racist things, you know, in the confidence of people that I know. I mean, we all do. This is, I mean, so there's a problem that I have with that, right? Granted, he is a public figure, and it's very easy since it's a slow news cycle or whatever it is, you can get some hits on your website, you know, you can make a name for yourself writing against it. So there's all those things. All I'm trying to say is that whenever you involve race, okay, and you ask that question, I'm going to be real about it. I'm not gonna say, oh, you should never say that. It's the same thing with like police brutality and stuff, right? Or things that happen. Well, you know what? I'd hate to say this, but sometimes police brutality, it's wrong. I mean, police brutality is wrong all the time, right? You would hope that the people that you put in charge will be better not to use that, okay? But there's a certain set of rules as a minority that you have to follow so you don't get your ass kicked by police, okay? And that isn't being said. That isn't being written. And there's also a certain group of people across all races, they like to be victims. You know, it's like, I'm not doing this because of my color and this and this. It's like, you know what, dude? I'm like, bust your ass. Don't let your race make you better or make you worse. You be the best person that you can be. There's like somebody, there's people on like say like American Idol or on like MasterChef, and they're like, they picked me a Latina, you know? Me, the Latina? It's like, you know what? You're putting yourself down. You are already setting yourself up to be a victim, or you already see yourself as a failure in your eyes, you know, because you want, you know, you're an individual person that can cook really well. You know, you're a great flipping cook, okay? That should be your calling card, not that you're a great cook, plus you're a Latina. And the whole thing is that I can say this stuff because when I was in journalism and newspapers and stuff, people would come to me and go like, it's so great we have our own kind in positions of power. And I'm like, and what kind is that? Like, oh, you know, I'm Mexican and stuff. Like, well, I'm not Mexican. You know, my last name is a Latino last name or a Hispanic last name. I said, but that's not who I am. Now, people are going to use me so they can say like they have, you know, a Latino, you know, contingent in their newsroom or whatever it is. Okay, but that's not my main driving force.
It's not going to define you.
Yeah, it's like I fight for everybody. If a white person, and that's what I did. If a white person was perceived in the wrong way, I would fight for them. It's very easy for like a white person to be the bad guy when it's against a minority race. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Like, what did the minority do? Well, the minority did this. I'm like, well, then say it. You can't just paint this white guy as a bad person, right? So that's kind of like with the whole thing. It's like, I think it's a stupid response. If Hulk Hogan believes that, he has every right to believe that. You know, it doesn't make him a good person or a bad person. It's just it's what he says. And you know what? And now I know where you're coming from. So now I'm going to see you in a different way. I don't need a big corporation or the media to tell me, well, this is what you should feel about Hulk Hogan right now. But it's such a knee-jerk reaction. We're supposed to be like up in arms about it. And I think it's a bunch of BS because every single person that has written, and I'm talking about, you can be white, you can be black, you can be Chinese, you can be Japanese, whatever race you are, right? Every single person has said a racist thing in their life. Every single person, when they go outside that door, they are affected by race. Their actions, you know, if you see a certain person that you don't, a certain group of people that you don't trust, you're going to act accordingly. Does that make you a racist? Yes, it does. Right?
It means you're stereotyping.
Yeah.
I don't know that it necessarily makes you a racist, but...
But, yeah.
There's nuance there, but sure.
Nuance, yeah. Let's do with more with the nuance, right? I'm not going to say that you're a racist because you feel a certain way, okay? Am I a racist? Yeah, I probably am a racist, right? But the whole thing is that I recognize what I am. And I make a solid effort to get away from my comfort zone of protecting myself out in the street like I used to have to, okay? And try to give people the benefit of the doubt. And then that's all you can do. If you recognize what you are and try to change it. This was said 8-9 years ago, right? If my daughter sleeps with a black man, am I gonna be happy about it? I don't know. Is it gonna be different? I think if my daughter sleeps with any guy, I don't care what it is. I'm not gonna be happy about it, right? But and whoever's listening, right? If you have a daughter, if you have kids, right? Who do you want that person to be? In the end, who do you want? What type of person do you want them to be married to? And the whole thing is that if it's a person that you're not ready to accept what it is, how are you gonna react to that? We can't, you know, if my daughters, you know, will start dating a black man, is that exactly what I want? I don't think so. But at the same time, it's like, okay, so what am I going to do about it now, right? Am I going to call this guy the N-word? Probably not. But I have to sit there and think about it and go, okay, you know, I mean, it's nothing is black and white. It's the situation that it is. I think people forget the situation. They just see something. They can feel right good about themselves. They can point at that person and say, that's a bad person, okay? But the person that's doing that, you know, the black journalist that's calling out Hulk Hogan because he used the N-word, well, you know what? You've done racist things yourself. You know, things that can, stereotypical things, yourself. You have played a stereotypical role with your race, so have I. I have used my nationality for gain in some areas, and then... At the same time,
I've been hurt by it,
when I'm using it for gain, I've stepped back and go, "Is this the type of person I want to be?" And I don't want to be that person, so I don't do it anymore. Like I don't go like, "Oh, hey, you know," like it's funny, like you know, like I'm Puerto Rican, right? And if there's another person that like I've you know, one of the parents is Puerto Rican as well, and I'll be like, "Man, it's like there's two Puerto Ricans in the same house," you know, like I don't, you know, that never happens, right? But at the same time, like if it's a way that we're raised or the way that we're, it's like, well, we're Puerto Ricans, you know what's up, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and is that stereotyping? Does that have a racist tinge to it? Of course it does. That's all I want to say about Hulk Hogan. I think the story's stupid. It was said, was supposed to be in a private, confidential conversation. And what I'm trying to say is that everybody has had that type of conversation with someone that they think that they're in a trusting relationship. Hulk Hogan is just stupid. I mean, you don't tell some lady you're having an affair with, you know, what it is. I mean, give me a break. I mean, I think the worst thing I have against that tape was that he's saying, like, oh, man, I ate a big old hamburger. Now let's go have sex. I'm like, come on, Dean. That's just nasty, Dean. You know?
I didn't even know about that.
There you go.
All right.
You're just putting me out on a limb today. You're making me say stuff I don't want to say.
I didn't
make
you say anything.
Well,
could have put the fifth.
I could have put the fifth, but I can't. Because discussion, we need to have discussion about this. And the discussion that's going on is black and white, it's yellow journalism, and it's just really bad.
All right.
Do you agree or disagree with anything I said?
I mean, I think there's a certain element of the fake social media outrage to where people are like, well, I'm supposed to be outraged by this, so I'm going to be outraged by this. And then there's a certain level of social media is like, I don't necessarily even know that people really, like, someone thinks they got a good zinger, and they may not even really feel offended, but they want to throw it out there and see if they can get a bunch of retweets and stuff like that. I think, I don't know, that's tough, that's tough for me to say, just because, yeah, it's confidential. But then, or like, it's a private conversation he thinks he's having. But that's how you kind of really learn how a person thinks or how they are, right? So, I mean, if he's going to go out on tape and say, I'm a racist, then, yeah, he's kind of putting himself out there. That's his own words. I don't know what's right and wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to make that, like, because that's the thing, like, and you kind of addressed this a little bit. It's like, that word is used so damn much in this, and I, you know, I teach middle school, so I know how these kids talk. And that word is thrown around like nothing. These kids have no concept of what it is. And we're talking about our musical culture and what earlier. I mean, like, we're kind of the generation that kind of turned that into a mainstream, not our usage per se, but the generation and the culture that we grew up on is kind of the one that turned that into an acceptable mainstream, a sort of acceptable mainstream word. And now you're to the point, like, you know, white kids are saying it all the time, Asian kids saying it all the time. It's desensitized. Black kid, I see Asian white kids saying it in front of and with black friends, and it's not an issue. Samoans think that that's their word, dude. I swear, dude. Yeah. They think they use it as freely as Puerto Ricans do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, so, like, for all these people, it's an acceptable thing to do, word to use, and then for him, it's not. Like, I don't know. I just think, there's no consistency.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think, like, the way that I answer the question and the way that you're answering the question, you know, it's two different ways of approaching it. Like, with me, I want to break down those barriers. You know, I want to say, you know, okay, so you're presented with this information. Are you going to follow the pack, or are you going to sit there and try to explore the situation and try to understand it? There's things that I have done. There's words that I have used. I'll say this one way. I've never used it towards a person out of anger. You know, I've never, like, you know, I'd never degraded someone to say, like, hey, like, you know,
you're a this.
Yeah, you know, right. And because that's like calling someone a hater. It's the exact same type of thing. I'm not gonna make excuses for it. You know, I think when it comes down to it, do I think that word is wrong? Yes, I do. Do I think it's a weakness of me? You know, to same thing with Mexicans, right? Like, Puerto Ricans and Mexicans don't get along, right? And, you know, in where we live in the Bay Area, you know, like, the word Mexican can be very derogatory, right? You can just brush someone off and, like, say, like, oh, you know, they're Mexican, you know, whatever it is, you know. Is that what I grew up in? Yeah, that's what I grew up in. Do I still have inklings where I feel that way? Yes, I do. But at the same time, has that culture done stereotypical things towards white people or towards people, like, they look at me like they look at me and they don't think I'm really, like, Latino or whatever because I don't speak Spanish or whatever it is. There's two sides to everything,
right?
And all I'm saying is, like, you know, I wish I had your approach sometime where you can sit back at it and not, you know, and you're processing what people tell you and you don't know what the answer is. Right, but you know, but you have, like, a general consensus of what's right and wrong. You think it's wrong, but there's other aspects to that story, and you want to hear that discussion.
Yeah, I'm not prepared to say, like, definitively one way or another. The only thing I'm definitively saying is, if that's enough to get Hulk Hogan completely erased from the WWE, then I see no way that Donald Trump should be walking scot-free after saying the stuff that he's been saying. That's the only point. There's got to be some consistency somewhere.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is that what the way that I approach is that I realize that things that I've done similar, probably said similar things, not like that, not to the degree of that, but I've never been put in that situation, mm-hmm. right? And I'm coming up on a time where my daughters are going to start dating and they're going to be sexually active and stuff. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, your goddaughter in a couple of years is going to be sexually active, right? And I hope to God...
Better be more than a couple of years.
Yeah, it better be like 30 years, right? But that's the whole thing. I haven't been put in that situation, right? I recognize the faults that I have done. And what I'm saying is that there's times that I still feel that way. And I can either go two ways, right? I can keep on... following that path of keep on thinking that way and just disregard the individual element of what the situation is, or I can look at the mistakes that I made and try to become better from it. And that's what I always try to do. And that's why I talk the way that I talk. That's why I say things that what I say is because I can back up what I say. I can admit that I'm wrong. A lot of people can't admit that they're wrong. A lot of people can never, you know, it's never their fault. You know, they're always the victim. They're not the people that make the other people a victim. What I'm saying is that there's situations that it's what he did. Everybody's had a similar type of situation. And if you say that you don't, then you're the best person in the entire world, because nobody's like, everybody is like that. Everybody follows stereotypes. Everybody will say something stereotypical because that's what they know. And if there's someone that isn't like that, then go ahead. But what I'm saying is your base reaction to a lot of things is based on race. And you need to recognize that. And you can't lambast someone or call someone out for doing something that you've done yourself. And that's why I'm never going to come like, oh, Hulk Hogan's totally wrong. He called this person a whatever. Now, if you come out, at, you know, and that's the whole thing with Trump, right? See, the whole thing with Trump with talking about Mexicans with all this stuff is I have no respect for the guy. So whatever he says, it's like, you know what, dude? I always thought you're an idiot. You're not going to waste my time and effort to get mad at you because you're an idiot and you have money. So people are going to give you the time of day because, you know, whatever it is, right? I agree with you. I think Trump should be taken out of the Hall of Fame too. I don't think he should ever be on WWE programming again, because he's come out and said that, and he's hurt a contingent of people, and he stereotyped them. And the whole thing is that there's a lot of people that disagree with what he says, but there's a lot of people that feel the same way he does. He's playing into the fears, and he's trying to get votes by playing into those fears. Right. I think that's more worse than this guy having a private conversation.
I agree.
Okay. Can we stop on that now?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's get into this is supposed to be a fast one, dude. Let's get into it. I got the segments all set.
Oh, you do?
So I got a mic, and I got a Hall of Fame as well.
Earlier we talked to Jumpin' Jeff Farmer. Let's go now to that interview. Folks, there's Jumpin' Jeff Farmer. Jeff, a while back, what a match you had with Motley.
Yep. Probably the hardest match I ever had in my life. But I don't like it when things aren't going my way. Motley Crue, you turned the tables on me. You turned the tables in a wrong way. You got me mad now. I've stood around. I've listened to everything you had to say. I did everything necessary. But when you turn around and you backstab me one way or another, and you cheat me out of what's rightfully mine, that's when I get angry. Now I'm the one doing the challenging. I'm issuing a challenge to you, Motley Crue. Get in the ring with me. This time, I'm going full force.
Jumpin' Jeff Farmer. Now let's go to the ring.
So, I kind of feel like, I'm not sure we did this one before, or if it was only you did the CM Punk Colt Cabana version of it.
I think we did the CM Punk Colt. We've talked about this many times, but this is the first time we actually had audio.
On wax,
yeah.
The guy doing the interview is awesome. At the end, he's like,
just
doesn't have no idea what to say after
such a long time. Well, he's like, are you done?
he gave him a second, you got anything more? Jumpin' Jeff Farmer. I mean, that is like the definition of awesomely bad. Like, it's a terrible, terrible interview, but it's so bad that it's hilarious. He can't get the opponent's name right. He keeps stuttering and saying the wrong thing. The loudest thing in the whole promo is his breathing, because he's so damn nervous. He's like, when you cheat me, it's hilarious.
We had to get it and talk about it at least once. So I thought it was a perfect time to.
That is it lightened up the show at the end.
Yeah, because we're getting kind of heavy. We're getting kind of deep.
Dude.
You know, I don't think anybody that's like, man, I just wanted to hear about you know, John Cena doing a springboard, you know, DDT or
stunner,
whatever it is. He's not, now I got the Jeff Farmer in me. But no, I mean, and the thing is, you bring up the announcer. Or the guy that, you know, he's no mean gene. Let's just say that. I mean, it starts off bad with that guy. I mean, to even like the guy had to record intro to that, and then they jumped to the interview, and then the whole thing. So he does the whole thing and does it really, really bad. And it's right. It's like the guy just like he stops and like. Poor Jeff is like just like out there on the limb, and this guy can't even help him. And when he's done, he's like, I mean, he's just like, he like looks at him and, okay, let's get back to the ring. He's like,
back to you, Jim.
Nothing to talk about that. Like, he couldn't, like, well, why do you think Motley Crue did that? You know, there's no like, you know, just like, okay, there you go. What a great promo.
I'm just going to hold this stick in front of your face. And whenever you're done talking, I'll throw it back to the studio.
And then that's a racist thing, too. And it's funny, you bring that has shades of the Eddie Murphy when he dresses up like a white guy. What are you doing? I'm just buying this newspaper. Go ahead, take it. It's free. So, nothing more needs to be said about that. Hall of Kayfabe. I want to put this guy in, and because we're supposed to do some homework on Stan Hansen. I didn't do it. Yeah, because we're busy and stuff. But the guy that I want to put in is Jim Cornette.
All right.
I think that guy definitely deserves to get in. One, because I mean, this guy was like Craig Sager before Craig Sager was Craig Sager. I mean,
with bad suits.
And I remember when I first saw this guy, I was like, man, I'm like, this guy, I'm like, what the hell is this? I'm like, this is just bad for wrestling. Just like really bad. I'm like, this guy wears these polyester suits. He has a tennis racket with the lace around it. And this guy's just like a straight up dork. I'm like, what a joke this is. I mean, this is just so bad. But then, he introduces, the Midnight Express going against the Rock and Roll Express. That Midnight Express and Rock and Roll Express was a great rivalry, and I just remember it had a ton of heat going into it. And I remember one part was that Cornette was suspended in an iron cage above the ring and going like, well, why is this guy? What's the point of this? I just don't get it. But the thing is I watched it, and it wasn't so much that Cornette stole the show, but he enhanced that match. And it was a great, I'm sitting there going like, okay, this is stupid. And I'm like, this guy, I don't like Jim Cornette. I don't like that he's suspended in the middle of the ring in an iron cage. But then I started watching the match, and this match is such a great match. And then they show Cornette up there again, and like Cornette's just like, you know, he's sweating and he's just like, the Midnight Express is not doing well. And he's just like playing to the teeth. Like he wants to try to get out, but he can't. I mean, he even tries to get out of it and he can't get out of it. And he's so like flummoxed that he can't get out of it. And I'm just going like, you know what, this works. It shouldn't work, but it works. And then he does the stuff with Smoky Mountain wrestling. He gives like guys like Chris Jericho his start, different kind of wrestlers, you know, wrestlers that held on a little bit too long. But like even Arn Anderson was in there for a while when WCW was kind of going back and forth on his contract. I think he has a great mind for the business, and I think he's a great talker as well.
Yeah, I think for guys of our age, like our first, when you're still kind of trying to figure out like how real things are and what everything is, like it's very easy to dismiss and dislike Jim Cornette when we were kids, right? He had a lot of like similarities to me to like Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart in certain ways. Not saying he's trying to be like him, but just like he's kind of like this chicken shit guy I wouldn't cheer for. He's got this gimmick that he throws in the ring for interference, the tennis racket. I was like, what the hell, a loaded tennis racket? I always thought that was kind of dumb. But yeah, as you kind of get older and understand more, like, responsibilities he had with a lot of like the Ring of Honor stuff, like in the early formations of that. And yeah, his mind for the business is really good. But I think he almost kind of makes it in on his shoot interview ability, because like, just looking at like the just like trying to learn about stuff that happened in the 90s and earlier than that, and the guy pulls no punches. It's always entertaining. really really hates Russo, which I guess kind of earns extra bonus points too. But yeah, he's a pretty interesting guy. I've heard a few like not just the shoot interviews, but actually podcasts. He was on with Chael Sonnen, I think, not too long ago, and that was a really interesting listen as well.
He was also on the Ric Flair one, and it brought me back to I remember watching the Monday Night Raw where he just threw up on the NWO, with Nash, Hall, and X-Pac, and I remember watching him. He just went crazy. I mean, he didn't say any names, but he basically said like X-Pac, the only reason why he has a job is because he can get drunk and he can throw up on himself, and these two guys can laugh at him doing it. And I remember, I mean, that was like taboo back then, right? It's like you didn't call out the other promotion. Mm-hmm. There's like these unwritten rules, and he broke them down. I remember watching him going like, I'm like, what the hell is this guy doing? I'm like, what is he doing? Then I started listening to him going like, I'm like, yeah, dude. I'm like, who the hell are you to say this about two of the biggest guys in the business, two guys that I like? Yeah. But then he starts talking about Xbox. And, I kind of agree with you on Xbox. You know? So, but there's that. But then he says, like, the reasoning behind it was because it was after with the Four Horsemen, where they made fun of Flair and made fun of Arn Anderson, right. And he was basically saying, like,
he was sticking up for
he was saying, like, you're disrespecting all these, like, you guys are making, you're making all this money off of the backs of these guys that made it possible for you guys to have money, like Ric Flair, like, you're making fun of Ric Flair when this is the reason why you guys can make the money that you do now. It's like, these guys paved the way for you guys to make all this money, and you turn around and you're showing a complete lack of respect for them. So that's the reason why he did that promo. And I remember at that time, WWE really didn't know what the heck it was doing. I mean, it didn't know. It just felt like they would do stuff just to do stuff. They were making fun of Hogan and Macho Man with those skits back then as well. And then they have. But the thing with Cornette was that Cornette did so well. I got pretty pissed off when I was like, dude, I'm like, what are you doing? And then I started listening to what he's saying. He was kind of breaking down the barriers of the hero worship that I had for Nash, Hall and Nash, because Hall and Nash was working, mm-hmm. and this guy was coming and saying, just destroying it down. It's like, well, you're a hater. You're just a hater. But then you listen to what this guy says, and you go like, yeah, you listen to it now. And I wanted to play it for the Golden Mic, and we can probably do it later on, but I didn't want to do the whole thing where he got the Golden Mic and he got Hall of Kayfabe, because that's some high cotton over there. But over time, you listen to that interview, and it's like, yeah, he was right. He did it at a time that, he did it at a time where that wasn't accepted, but I think he kind of invented the whole shoot interview, if you really think about it. And then you just kind of do like his book. He's on a ton of booking committees with WCW, WWE as well. I think he brings an old school mentality to wrestling that needed to be there at a time that it wasn't.
I think that certain companies would probably be in better hands if they would have him running their shows and booking to this day right now. I think that's good. It's funny because I listen to Cornette stuff periodically, but that never really kind of like the light never went off on inducting him. But yeah, no, I like that. I like Cornette in there.
So let's go real fast. Let's talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, my favorite part of the show.
For this short podcast,
yeah, I'm gonna say that Tanahashi versus Nakamura. Is starting to really become Flair versus
Steamboat.
I think this rivalry that they're doing, every match that I've seen these guys, and I haven't even seen the first matches that you told me to see. I've never seen the introductory match, but I watched this last match in the G1 Climax tournament, and I was once again blown away by both performers. I mean, Nakamura, of course, I think Nakamura is the guy, because his strong style just translates really well. I mean, it's impactful and stuff. Tanahashi did the kind of the sling blades. He was throwing sling blades, going crazy. You think Nakamura is going to win with a Bumae? He throws a sling blade. All the spots that Nakamura usually does to set up for a match to win, he throws a sling blade in there, and then he wins with this crazy kind of like style pin that. Most of the time, if someone would have won with a pin like that, I would have been pissed off. But I'm watching, going like, well, here's the thing, like, Tanahashi opened up the show. So usually, like, when a guy opens up the show, that guy's going to win. So even though I knew that Tanahashi was going to win, I'm watching this match going like, well, maybe Tanahashi isn't going to win. Maybe Nakamura is going to win because, Tanahashi and Nakamura work so well, and I think they both have such a great respect for each other that... Tanahashi can open up a show where Nakamura wins, and he can talk about how, Tanahashi can talk about how he loses. But then Tanahashi wins. But I'm watching this match going like, I think Nakamura's going to win this match. Even though Tanahashi was in the beginning, introducing the show, there's no way Nakamura can lose this match. And then Tanahashi pulls out that pin, and I wasn't mad about it. And I don't want to bring up John Cena because we kind of brought up that, made the parallel last during the last podcast, but these matches that these guys are doing, they're the best matches in the business right now.
Yeah, I didn't really care for that finish, to be honest.
I didn't care for it either.
And I didn't.
But I wasn't opposed to it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have minded. I didn't have a problem with the flash pin. I just didn't think that particular roll up looked like super convincing to me. But be that as it may, that's what.
Technical difficulties again. Look at that.
They maxed us out of 140.
Yeah. And we're still going on this one too. So here we go. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Just I've seen enough that I know that I don't know who's going to win those matches, and that's why it's worth watching all the time. I know Nakamura can beat him. It seems like Tanahashi's getting the I'm guessing Tanahashi wins like 60-40, maybe.
I'd probably say like 70-30. Yeah.
Okay, but their 30% chance is still enough that I know that it can happen, and it does happen from time to time.
But the difference is, it doesn't matter. I mean, for me, it doesn't matter who wins, because it's a good match no matter what. And I think Nakamura is my favorite wrestler right now. And I should be mad that Tanahashi's beating him, because I'm not a big fan of Tanahashi. But when these two guys get together, it's just it's an event. It's an event, if you will, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, yes. Yeah. Well, it brings out the J.J. Dillon in me, dude.
and I think that's kind of one of the things where, you know, to combat this whole like hater criticism, right? I mean, you or us, we can not be a big fan of a certain guy, but still understand that there's merits. Like, I think we do a good job of like compartmentalizing, like, okay, this guy's really good, even though I don't particularly care for him, but I can see why people do. And that's a thing with Tanahashi. Like, I mean, I like Tanahashi. He's not my favorite guy in New Japan either. But I mean, I'm not gonna fast forward any of his matches. I respect his performance. He's really good. He just doesn't happen to be my guy. So we can compartmentalize it and do that and say, yeah, I get why this guy's on top, even though he's not my favorite. It's not a thing with John Cena where it's like, oh, well, he's not my favorite, so I'm going to bury the guy. There's plenty, like, as we've laid out for probably 30 minutes, I mean, there's several logical reasons why people that know something about wrestling don't like this guy. And the thing with Tanahashi is, whether you like him and his style or you don't, like, if you know anything about wrestling, you have to respect what he does between those ropes.
Here's the thing with Tanahashi. There's a small part of time in New Japan Pro Wrestling where they were showing Tanahashi matches and he was winning, and he beat Nakamura for the Intercontinental Belt, and I was getting tired of it. I was like, dude, I'm like, I don't like this guy. I don't want to watch him wrestle. I get tired of his whole shtick. But then they show that then they show him in another match he wins. I'm like, you know, that's a good match. They show him lose the Fale. They show both those guys losing the Fale. I'm going, okay, you know what? Okay, I can appreciate what he does. And then it comes to a point where I don't appreciate it, where it becomes like, you know what, this guy's a good wrestler. You know, like, I don't like that he wins most of the time, but I'm starting to watch this Nakamura match, and I had no problem with the finish. I mean, was it the greatest storytelling finish there was? No. But the thing is, I was entertained. I mean, I watched 30 minutes of a match, completely absorbed into it, completely entertained, and watching both these guys on top of their game. And that's why I'm saying it's like a Ric Flair, it's a Ric Flair Steamboat match. And the whole thing about the Ric Flair Steamboat rivalry is that the one that you've seen on TV, Steamboat won two out of two of them. And Flair won the next one, and then Steamboat never got the return match or whatever it was. This is a case where these guys face each other all the time. Tanahashi, for the most part, wins all the time, which I have no problem with. But when these two guys get together, it's just great to watch. I don't care who wins. I don't care who loses. It's a case where, was it a weak way for Nakamura to lose? I think it was, right? And I'm going like, you know. But I'm sitting there going like, you know what? It doesn't matter because the match is great. And I have no problem with the finish. It's just nice to watch a wrestling match where you don't have to worry about the politics of everything. Granted, because it was like a year ago, whatever it was. But both of these guys, so like, you know, with John Cena, right? It's like, it's 70% the other guy and 30% John Cena, and John Cena wins. a really good John Cena match is it's 60% the other guy and it's 40% the other guy. It's 60% the guy he's facing, 40% John Cena, and John Cena wins. You're like, oh, okay, that's a necessary evil. This is both of these guys gave 100%.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter who wins because both these guys, they are so good. They are so protected, and they even protect people different, right?
Yeah. You have no concern that loss is going to send Nakamura down the card.
Yeah.
And that's where you can just sit and enjoy a match that's as good as it is, and you can respect the match that Tanahashi puts on because he's doing 50% of the work to Nakamura's 50% of the work. And then there's also a track record there that says Tanahashi will elevate guys and lose to other guys and make stars out of people.
Yeah. And when you have two guys that elevate guys, other guys in the right way, and they face each other, they just go through the roof. Yeah. And both these guys come out looking like $1 million. That match, right? I mean, if you guys haven't seen that match is what wrestling should be. And I always say that, like Ric Flair versus Steamboat, that's wrestling as well. Because, you know, even like the second match with Ric Flair, it was a kind of a questionable pin, but there's drama in that pin. And, you know, Flair's like, oh, you know, I actually pinned him, this, that, and this. And it was good storytelling there. Ric Flair and Steamboat is the basis for any good wrestling match. Those three matches, you have to watch those three matches. And they stand the test of time. They're not as fast-paced. There's no high spots. But, give me a break. I mean, those three matches are the best three matches I've ever seen. Tanahashi and Nakamura are those matches with high spots, with high impact. And I'm sitting there, I just get blown away every time I see these two guys face each other. It's I know that there's not going to be ever going to be a bad match between those two guys. And both those guys, I mean, that match, that's probably one of the best matches I've seen. I wish that I would have seen it in 2014 because that is easily the best match I've ever seen. That's one of the top matches I've seen. That's like a top three match I've ever seen.
All right.
To watch New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so movie scale number 118. I'm sorry if I hurt some feelings or gave you some insight to the way I think, but I think that discussion needs to be done. I mean, we're not cliche podcasters. You know, we're not trying to make you laugh. You know, we're not trying to be funny. I mean, we hope what we say is entertaining to a small degree, but that discussion needs to be out there, and if it has to be in a platform that only 40 people listen to, then 40 people listen to it. But I'm not going to pull my punches. And I know you're always there to kind of come back in and kind of bring perspective. So, yeah,
that's what I do.
Hey, good job. You have anything else to say to your 70 fans?
No. Stop with the hater talk, man. Like, you want to engage in a conversation, then let's have that conversation. I know it's not super easy to do in 140 character chunks, but let's have a reasonable discussion about why you think this guy's good or why you think he isn't, and leave like just the hater name calling to like the middle schoolers.
You don't have to win. When you have this conversation, you do not have to win. I've had a Twitter conversation about race with a black person in wrestling, whatever it was. A black guy responded to me. We probably went back for about 8 to 10 tweets, and he finally just, you know, he's like, I understand what you're saying. He's like, I think you're wrong. He's all, but you know, You're not 100%. He says you're not 100% wrong. You're not 100% right. He's like, this is where you're coming from. I come from this area. There's no way that you can come from my area, you know, because you're not black. And it's like, yeah, you know what? You're right. You know, and he's all. There's a good discussion, and that's what it's all about. So, mood scale number 118. Got my big man, my boy over here. Better have my donuts. I am Bad News Ramen, and we will check you out next week. And Bet Adam Adonis over here is going to come up with a soliloquy about all of his fans to say instead of going, like, no, it's good. It's good. It's good. And Gail Kim sucks.
No.
All right. We're out.
He'll be talking about Kim either.
baby. Bite me. Working on it.